I think it helped me as well finding a motivation that was internal rather than external. Like I just found that I would have been happy just finishing the book and completing it, so I felt I'd done it. And then rather than thinking if it doesn't get published it's a failure, doing the process and learning from it, I was able to kind of get into a mindset where that was enough for me.
Welcome back to Not Too Busy to Write. I'm Penny Winsor, author and book coach. Today I'm talking to international best-selling crime author Jane Harper. Jane's debut novel, The Dry, defined a new subgenre when it exploded onto the scene 10 years ago. Australian noir, which blends the unique landscape of the outback and its extreme climate and isolation with mystery and suspense. Jane Harper is the master of writing the Australian landscape to create tension, atmosphere, and intense communities in all six of her novels, three of which have been adapted for the screen. Today, I'm talking with Jane about her latest novel, Last One Out, the story of a remote dying town on its very last legs and a family whose son has been missing for 5 years. Jane talks with me about her love of the forced proximity of isolated rural communities, which make perfect settings for stories, how she always begins at the end, and her extensive planning process. Last One Out is out on April 23rd. If you love a crime novel that is steeped in atmosphere with deeply satisfying twists, this is one for you. Just a heads up that on May 1st, in The Fold, we are starting a new 21-day writing challenge. If you would love some support, accountability, to dive headfirst into your writing project, come and join us. There will be daily audios. On the membership site, there'll be lots of chat with fellow writers as well as co-writing sessions. Last year, the results were phenomenal. Lots of members said that they had written more in those 21 days than they had all year. So come along and join us. All of the links are in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Jane, thank you so much for being with me here today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we were just talking before. I was really surprised to see you in daylight because you are actually in the UK at the moment. So we're having this conversation at a really normal, civilized time, not across the other side of the world.
For once, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I have just read Last One Out. It's your sixth novel. It has the incredible atmosphere that your readers, me included, just know and love. But I wanted to ask you, first of all, your background was as a journalist. And when it came time to writing novels, did you know that crime and suspense was going to be your home as a novelist? Did you know right away that's what you wanted to do?
No, I would say. I think it was... So I'd never tried to write a book before I wrote The Dry. Like it wasn't sort of one of these kind of aspiring authors who has lots of, you know, manuscripts and short stories and things. All I had was a dream and nothing to show for it. So that was kind of where I was starting from. And I had probably two genres that I really enjoyed reading. And one was kind of crime mystery stories. And then the other was probably more like what we used to be disparagingly called chick lit, you know, kind of, I would say, very emotionally driven, humorous, gritty, compelling stories featuring women. And so I absolutely love both kind of books as well. And I think if things hadn't kind of worked out as a crime mystery author, that probably would have been sort of something I also would have been interested in. But I think that is a deceptively hard genre to write well. Is really, yeah. Really difficult. But crime and mystery is no picnic either.
Yeah.
But they both have their challenges for sure. So I think, I think ultimately what I really love most as a reader is I love a good kind of question with a resolution, you know, and that's exactly what you get with a crime and mystery book. You get that sort of, that kind of journey of like wondering and trying to work it out and then hopefully having a bit satisfying solution at the end.
As I mentioned, I love the atmosphere in your books, and the Australian landscape is almost like another character in your books. And I did wonder, because I know you were born in the UK, you were raised in Australia, you've sort of spent time in both places, you've straddled both countries. I wonder, do you think that that perhaps gives you a different relationship with the Australian landscape than perhaps someone who has only ever lived in Australia? Do you think that's maybe brings that slightly different perspective
Yeah, I absolutely think it did. And I think, I'm not sure, honestly, if I had never spent time outside of Australia, if I maybe would have been able to write certainly my debut novel in the way that I did. I think a big part of that was having kind of grown up in Australia and then spent some time as a teenager and young person in the UK and then coming back as an adult and having, you know, some really clear memories. And then we're in times like challenged as an adult as well, because, you know, things that I remembered so clearly when I saw them again with fresh eyes were not, you know, were not how I remembered, or they had changed over time more often, you know. And that was a very, I think, key part of what came into writing, trying to capture that landscape when I came to write the books, picking those elements that really stood out to me as someone who had the opportunity to look at them in a slightly fresh way and then try to capture that on the page.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I know for a lot of people, back in the day, one of their first experiences, say, for instance, on film of watching the Australian landscape might have been something like Walkabout, which was not an Australian director, Nicholas Roeg, you know, who's German. And I do think it's sometimes really interesting when we bring a slightly different, more partially outsider perspective to see something. It is really interesting to me. When I first read that you had grown up in both places, there was something about that didn't surprise me for some reason, which is interesting, isn't it? But yeah. The themes that also travel through many of your books, and Last One Out certainly takes this to a whole nother level, is you write very closely about community and communities that are pushed often quite to the limits of endurance, and how we behave when our communities are pushed to the edge. Is there something specifically about community that you think you're really drawn to writing about?
Yeah, look, I do love a good isolated setting for a few reasons. I mean, one is that I think creatively it really offers a lot. I mean, especially in a country like Australia where it's so geographically diverse, so many different types of these small communities, there's really a lot to play with. There's also sort of this daily life combined with kind of an underlying of inherent danger as well at times, like be it in the work they do or the geography itself or the isolation or the challenges that come with, just being somewhere like slightly remote, or even the environment itself often, you know, so there's that kind of little, you know, level of danger that is good to kind of be able to bring in, especially when you've got a book with an element of mystery and suspense. I do like as well, from a practical level, the way that smaller communities kind of force people to interact. You know, you may not like the guy who runs a shop, but you have to shop in that shop. You know, it's not like a city where you just go to the other shop. So it does, again, on a practical level, it does help force interactions between characters in a very natural way.
Yeah.
And I also like it just more maybe as a reader even, when, especially when you've got a mystery where it sort of evolves and resolves in the same bubble. So the question and the answer are all kind of in the same, the same area and the same group of people.
And in Last One Out, the community is a really fascinating one because it's a town that's quite literally dying. A mining town is encroaching on the town, and for a variety of reasons, it's killing it. So it's the pollution and the noise, but also the devaluation of the property. And it's leading to community members kind of really turning against each other. It's like the perfect storm in a way, isn't it? And did that come from something you had read about a town that this has really happened to? Because it doesn't feel at all far-fetched in Australia that this is the kind of thing that could happen.
Yeah, it actually literally came from something I'd read. Exactly that was it. That was a seed of it. And years earlier as well, which is why I always tell aspiring authors you should write down any ideas you have, because you never really know when later, you know, an idea might come from it. Just anything that sort of strikes you, it could be an interesting, an interesting sort of start of a story. So in the case of this one, I did actually read an article, probably at least 4 or 5 years ago, exactly about a community that had, you know, was beloved and thriving, and then for various reasons, which I can't even really remember the reasons now, actually, but it had become a shadow of itself, and the jobs had gone, and the people had, you know, left, and it was the people who had remained talking about how much they loved it. But the question for me was, why are you still there? Because everything you're talking about is no longer is no longer there. And that was sort of the seed of it. And then when I started looking into it, it was really, yeah, I mean, really saddening actually to see exactly how many communities have undergone something similar for all kinds of reasons. And then I chose the industrial, kind of industrial mining operation. But I mean, there's many different causes for why these kind of rural communities often kind of struggle. And even as right up to when, you know, when I was in, you know, the book was finished, you know, my mum sent me a link to an ABC article and said, oh, I think someone's read an early copy of your book. You know, it was literally a story that was almost could have been lifted from, you know, from the scenario in Last One Out. So, yeah, so that was kind of where that whole community built up from.
That Roe and Griff, who are the estranged couple who are at the heart of this particular novel, their son Sam has been missing for 5 years at the start of the novel, and Roe has long since left town and is back for the anniversary. One of the things that really struck me is that you write in, I think, all of your books in various different ways, really beautifully about grief, and both about acute grief, but also about the kind of long tail, long effect that grief has on us. And I feel like in this book, probably even more so than the others, because this couple at the heart of the story have dealt with their missing son in extremely different ways. And it's just really interesting because it is reflected in what's going on in the wider town in terms of how people are dealing with the grief of losing what is essentially their home, right?
Yeah, thank you for picking up on that, because that's exactly what I was sort of hoping to achieve with it. I think the fact that, yeah, Roe has gone through this really traumatic event, and it is completely upended her life. You know, her marriage has collapsed, she's left the home that she had built with her family, and she's forced to try and find a new way of life and find some sort of different form of happiness in this very different scenario than what she'd maybe anticipated a few years earlier. And then and then on a sort of larger scale, a similar thing is happening in the community, and that they're all kind of seeing this way of life collapsing and these memories sort of fading away, and people they're very close to moving, and so what's happened to her is kind of is echoes in a larger way in the town. And I think that's something that I've found kind of really interesting in writing crime and mystery novels is maybe less so the actual incident itself and more the impact it has. Because people can suffer the exact same traumatic events, and they affect it and respond in very different ways. And that's what I find quite interesting to kind of tease out with the characters.
Yeah. It was really interesting when I was reading it. I was thinking, hang on, is this your first female protagonist? And I wasn't sure, and I had to go back and double check. And it is. Roe is your
first. It is.
So I am so curious about that, especially having said that you did all you do also really like kind of women's stories and kind of, you know, gritty and funny women's stories, that your first five novels are written from a male perspective. I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, you know, and it's something I actually have considered myself with each novel because it is something I've sort of been aware of for a little while. And because I love writing about the female characters. I think this brings so much to stories. So I think really what it comes down to is kind of writing technique. Because for me, the books are always kind of plot driven as a starting point, and then you build out the characters the best to tell that story. And so each time, who is the best person to tell the story? And the character always has to be someone quite specific, in that they have to have a specific relationship with what's happened, because ultimately they're going to be the eyes and ears of the reader. So they have to know something about what has happened. They have to have sort of a specific relationship with the people involved, both who maybe appears to be involved and who ultimately is going to be involved. You know, so there's that sort of double kind of question about it. They have to be someone who has a sort of certain inside knowledge that will come out during the course of the book. So they're quite a function. Well, they're very functional. You know, and you like to think they're very sort of, it's a very romantic thing coming up with your main character, and they're just a very charismatic person who's going to carry the book through. But actually they perform a really, really key functions. And so for each of those, You know, I remember with Fork, who has been 3 out of 5, you know, he became a male character because I needed him to have a very close relationship to be the family at the center of that crime in that book. But I didn't want it to be kind of an old girlfriend or a sister or someone. It just sort of muddied the waters in ways that I felt wasn't helpful to the plot. Then for the other two books, The Standalone Survivors and Lost in It, man, I did consider both of those starting off, is that something that would support a female main character? But for both of those, you couldn't sort of gender swap them and still tell the story in the same way. They needed to be men for plot reasons, you know, which I wasn't delve into now, but they needed to, it needed men to tell their stories. So that was, but then for exactly the same reason, that was why Ro was such a perfect character for this book. Because straight away I could tell that it needed to be told by her. Like, there were other people I could have, you know, I could have probably told from other people's perspective, well, but she was the best one for all those, exactly as I just laid out. She had that insight. She had that connection. She has that deep connection with the town as well. And she can be the best as it is for the reader.
Mm. Okay, this is so interesting because I wanted to ask you about your process. I'm completely fascinated. I think particularly writers who do crime and suspense, because they are such intricate, they need to be such intricate stories in order to be able to work and to give us that deep satisfaction. So do you usually start then with the what's at the heart of the story in terms of the crime itself and the perhaps the victims then before then you build up the other characters around them?
Yeah, I do. So when I'm thinking about what is the book going to be about? I'm really focusing on that kind of whodunit moment, that the resolution. Like, what has actually happened? What has really taken place here? Who is involved? Who knows about it? What has brought them to this extreme moment? And then, yes, and then it's a question of then building out the characters. So in that case, yes, like who is involved? But who are these people? And what are they like? And what do they do? And then. Very closely with that comes the setting. So what setting would support an incident like this? So it's sort of being built out from there. So I always know what the ending is going to be. And I just find that a lot easier because then it allows you to kind of, that is very concrete in my mind. This is what's really happened. And then the question is, what does the reader think has happened? And what alternatives can you present that maybe will be plausible and will lead them down the wrong track? But you know that heart is still very solid and everything can kind of funnel into that ending endpoint. So I never find myself kind of in a corner. I'm like, oh my gosh, how, who did do it then? You know, it's always kind of funneled. All the energy is funneled into making that resolution the most believable and satisfying that it could be.
And so in terms of building out the rest of the cast of characters, because it is usually like a kind of, I think of your books as having a bit of a cast. I was talking to Francesca Siegel last year, who wrote Welcome to Glorious Tuga. It's set on an isolated island. And I was asking her about how that community came about. And apart from her, a few main people, she was like, I knew the incomer. And then I knew that a certain isolated community, we're going to have certain kinds of people in it in order for it to function. So it began almost in a functional kind of way. Like, she knew there had to be a doctor. She knew there had to be, you know, somebody, you know, who ran the shop, that kind of thing. Does in terms of building up that cast of characters that are going to play a role in the story, is that part of it, is knowing who would belong in that setting, in that town, what kind of characters would be there?
Yeah, I completely agree with the way she's described it as well. It's you're sort of thinking about, so two things, like who do I need and who is realistic? And also who would have, you need characters to have an excuse to interact as well. So you can't just have a completely isolated loner, because otherwise it's really hard to bring people in. You need people who either they live really close or they're related in some way or they work together, some sort of connections between them. So you're thinking about it on a functional level. It's as brazen as thinking like, okay, who is going to be the red herring? Who is going to look quite suspicious?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to paint them as being suspicious. It's going to be the reader's going to think they've kind of cleverly identified this person. So who is going to be that person? Who is going to be the very one? Who is going to be the one you'd never suspect? You know, all those kind of things as well. And so for a long time, I think it, I think a lot of aspiring authors really put a lot of pressure on themselves to know these characters very early on. And I honestly feel it's more of a process that comes out as you put them in situations. So the more you expose the characters to situations, the more you think about, when the character has to order coffee, then you think, okay, what's their coffee order? When they reach for something on their bedside table, what else is on there? What other junk do they have? They have to, feel through to get their reading glasses or whatever. So it's things like that kind of help you get to know the little things about them. And I think it's okay as well for the characters to be quite two-dimensional for a long time, just so that you get that plot functioning. They don't all have to be deep and fully evolved on that first draft. You can have them just doing their job, saying what they need to say, being suspicious in that moment, finding that clue, and then once you've kind of got that solid, you can start adding in believable dialogue, a good description, maybe a little personality quirks, making sure that the way they speak is persistent, all those little things that make them feel real. But the characters, don't get too caught up in the romance of the characters. They are, in the same way as language or anything else, they're a functional part of the story, and you can treat them as such if that helps.
Oh, I love putting it that way. I think that's really great. Well, that brings me to a question I had about in terms of like your outlining. How significant is your outline before you kind of start laying down that first draft in order, as you said, you get to know the characters a little bit more on the page itself. But how detailed is that outline before you start writing?
Yeah, it becomes incredibly detailed. I spent a really long time planning, and it starts off really basic, that's the core, like what has really happened, what might it look like. I sort of make a lot of notes about little elements I think might add something to the story. So is this a bit of setting? Is this something that, a conflict between two characters might be useful to put in? And a lot of times those notes will just be kind of literally whatever I can think of. And then I'll come to a point where I try and put them in sort of an order, like what is actually useful here. And I try and write down kind of in the best way I can chronologically what needs to happen. Mm. So from the start, like I use sort of placeholders for this as well. So at some point, maybe halfway through, they need to discover a big clue. So I'll just call it big clue, like I don't know exactly what that is
going to look
like.
Yeah.
But, I know at some point, you'll know that it has to be a bit of a twist somewhere. So you think, okay, this is a bit where things change or something like that. So, and even if you're not exactly sure what that looks like, it sort of puts your brain in the right frame of mind to start thinking about, well, what could that look like? And it, what you're missing, and so you're not just kind of, you don't have a never ending list of things you need to think about. You've actually got a bit of structure to it. And then I would just keep on refining that over and over. I mean, that's part of I hate to use the word boring, but the kind of, I guess, the grunt work of writing, just going back to it and just refining it, testing things out. Is this better than that? Is that better than this? And to the point where I've got, a plan that probably honestly could be like 40,000 words for a novel that's only 100,000 words. And it'd be laid out chapter by chapter. I know what happens in that chapter, how it starts, particularly how it ends, and then how the next one starts. So there's
full chapter plan. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And it would be pretty extensive. I'd have maybe snippets of dialogue. I'd know exactly what was going to be discussed. I know what the reader needs to know to get from it. Uh-huh. So that then when I come to write it, I can just open up and I think, okay, we're going to do chapter one today. And I've got my notes for chapter one, copy paste on a Word document. And then, you haven't got that kind of fear of the blank page. So you've already got probably 1,000 words or something in note form of what needs to happen. And then it's kind of a question of refining it to a point where it's, writing it nicely, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Honestly, it's just so interesting to hear how different writers approach the page, because it's so incredibly varied. But as someone, as a nonfiction writer, that appeals to me so much, because that's why I write nonfiction.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because you have to really have a very detailed proposal in order to sell the book, and then you write the book after you've sold it. But the proposal is that, basically. It's, it's very detailed. But yeah, so that super appeals to me. And so you've written six books now. And it's been 10 years. Has it been 10 years since the
drive
came out?
Yeah, 10 years. Yeah, it has. Yeah, 2016 that came out. Yeah.
So how has this process evolved for you? Has it changed very much over those 10 years in terms of like getting the words onto the page and getting the book out?
Yeah, I think it's actually sort of refined to the point where I sort of, with each book, I realize more and more what works, you know. So even back when I was writing The Dry, I still had a plan. It was not as extended, but it was probably more of a draft than a plan, but it was still a lot shorter. And it was, and even then I knew where I was going to go. All these elements are kind of still used. Like I knew the whodunit, I knew what it was going to look like. It was just sort of a slightly probably more finding my way through it kind of process. And then with each book, that plan has become more and more refined, and I've really focused a lot more on getting those elements. We're doing all the hard work that comes with the twists and turns and the, you know, the clues and all those elements. I do all the thinking before I do the writing. And it's just evolved to the point where now it is easier. Because I guess, you know, the more you do anything, the better you get at it. So there's a lot of it is practice and trial and error. So
I watched your brilliant TED Talk, which I'm so glad I found. It was, I think, 2018. And
yeah,
I think you'd written three books when you had done your TED Talk. But yeah, that was so interesting. I really loved what you talked about in that, this idea of, as a writer, learning to just control what you can control. And forgetting about everything else.
Yeah, thank you. That was such an interesting process to do that TED Talk, actually, because I think it made me really consider what it is that has been valuable to me, and what it was that was holding me back. Because I think when I had this kind of, you know, a dream and a blank page, you know, it just seemed. I think writing a novel just feels like an absolute mountain to climb, and that put me off for years. I mean, years and years and years, and it honestly could have. There's a very real scenario where it put me off forever, you know? And I think I was just lucky that I kind of, the stars aligned a little bit in that I had that motivation at a time when I was able to kind of put a little bit of time into it and follow that where it led. And, but I mean, it easily could have not happened for me. So, and I think a big thing is the sort of, like romanticizing of it, thinking, you know, you need to have this like lightning strike moments and the characters need to kind of be real and speak to you. And a lot of it is honestly just doing the base level work. So, you know, you write down the notes, you kind of try and structure them. The magic comes right at the end. You know, it really only comes probably in the absolute finished polished products. And it's a long time to wait for that. So you have to just kind of put that scaffolding in place. To allow the story to develop. And the thing that also struck me was I think there's a lot of people who would have the necessary skills to write because they, you know, they have that discipline in their day-to-day lives. They maybe do a job with a lot of paperwork or a lot of, you know, involved speaking to people. They understand how people work. They understand how to express themselves on paper. And I think they underestimate maybe how important those skills are in terms of writing a novel. And I would love those people who really do have that aspiration but feel that they're not in the rights, don't have the right background or training to maybe tap into those skills and just realize how much they could help them achieve that if they want to.
That's such an interesting point because it is really interesting, isn't it, what's required in order to get words onto the page. Sometimes it is the challenge of sitting down to work on something when no one is expecting it from you, and then it's having to go to quite a lot of depth in a way, like more depth, I think, than sometimes we always realize before we embark on a big project, how deep we're going to have to go in order to be able to pull it off. But also then that depth is where a lot of the satisfaction in the work is, isn't it?
And I think as well, it's really, it feels incredibly frivolous as well to spend a lot of time on a creative project. Like I'm just going to spend, you know, multiple hours per week on writing my novel. It's not something everybody feels comfortable saying out loud, you know, because it does feel like, you know, we've all got responsibilities and it can feel quite self-indulgent. But I think, you know, it's, I mean, for me, the payoff was so worth it. And I think you know, if it's something that you've really been harboring for a while, just that satisfaction of, you know, giving it a go is worth dedicating that time to, you know, and like finding, I think it helped me as well, finding a motivation that was internal rather than external. Like I just found that I would have been happy just finishing the book and completing it. So I felt I'd done it. And then rather than thinking if it doesn't get published, it's a failure, doing the process and learning from it, I was able to kind of get into a mindset where that was enough for me. And that really helped as well. So if you can find a goal that is achievable without anybody else having to be involved, I think could also help.
Yeah, that's such good advice. And in terms of what happened with your first book, obviously it was like a runaway success, international success. And this is actually not the case, obviously, for so many, and maybe people in other countries don't realize, but there are so many fantastic Australian writers who have a lot of success in Australia and don't necessarily break out internationally. You've now often been cited as creating a whole subgenre of crime, which, thank you very much, by the way. What a great subgenre, Australian noir. But what was it, do you think, that captured the kind of the international public in terms of the dry? Was it that that setting, that the allure of the Australian setting? Do you think that was part of it?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say, isn't it? Because I mean, why do some books break out and others don't? And it's a lightning in a bottle, isn't it? If we knew, we'd all do it, you know. I was taken by surprises more than anybody, I have to tell. I think, you know, in terms of feedback I got from it, I mean, I think it was partly like the setting seemed very exotic overseas. You know, I think it resonated with Australia as a something relatable, but then it had that element of feeling very different to overseas readers. I think maybe the themes in it were quite universal. So even though it was a very Australian driven, you know, characters and setting, there were a lot of emotions are universal. I mean, we all know how to experience them. I mean, I think that was something that a lot of people could kind of tap into. And yeah, I mean, beyond that, I don't know. I'm just really grateful that people did pick it up. You know, I mean, it's like you said, I mean, there's a lot of kind of sliding doors moments, I think, in the book world where sometimes, you know, there's other roads that could easily be traveled, and you never really know exactly why and how you end up on the one you're on. But it's been a great decade, I have to say. I couldn't ask for more.
Three of the books, your books now, have been adapted for screen. How involved have you been in that process? Are you very much one of those authors that's like, I'm going to hand that over to somebody else, thank you very much, and concentrate on my books? Or do you get involved? Or how has that process been for you?
Yeah, look, I tend to swan in for the fun bits and then leave the hard work to other people. So, absolutely, I will set up a set and shake Harry Banner's hand for sure. I can make myself available for that, no problem. But in terms of like doing any of the actual work, I tend to leave that to the experts, I think. It's a really different process. I mean, writing a book and creating a film are completely, like, they are so different. You know, even the source material initially is the same. And it's not something I really have ever had, you know, a huge desire or interest in to be involved with. Like, I love writing books. That's what I wanted to do. And I'm happy to focus on that and, be where my strength lies. But I've been very fortunate with the adaptations. They've been great. I mean, we had The Dry and Force of Nature were done by the same team. They became really great films with, you know, my close personal friend Eric. And then Survivors became to a really good Netflix series, which reached a lot of people internationally, which was really good to see. I love that they've been set in Australia. They've kept that Australian setting. They've cast Australian actors. I think they've remained true to the spirit and feel of the books. Because all I really want from the adaptations, honestly, is something the readers enjoy. I want them to feel that they have, the readers who connected with the books, I want them to feel that like they can recognise that connection within the adaptation. And then also people who maybe haven't read the books, so if they watch it on screen and they enjoyed it, they feel, well, maybe I would enjoy the book as well. That's always what I want from it in the end.
I just binged The Survivors, and it feels like your world. They did. I feel like they did such a great job. It's on Netflix in the UK, Ireland. It's probably in Netflix in the US as well. Everyone go watch it. It's brilliant. But that doesn't always feel, that's not always the case with adaptations. You know, sometimes it can feel like, oh, they've, it just feels like a different world, but this very much felt like your world. And I totally agree. Thank God they've set them, they've still set them in Australia, because I think it would have been such a shame because so many authors who have, you know, really brilliant adaptations taken either out of the UK and into the US or out of Australia and into the US. So yeah, it was really wonderful to see. I did wonder, did the dry film come out before you had written the third book in that series?
Did it.
Or had you written it already?
Let me think. Let me just think for a second. The dry came out mid-COVID. I think I had not written it yet. No, I think the dry came out and I would have been either just starting it or maybe... I hadn't written it at that point. No, the dry film came out first and then I started writing the book. Yeah.
Yeah, because I just wondered, like, did you start to see Eric Garner as Aaron Paul? Like, when you were writing that third book, was he then and his performance and, like, some of the other, a couple of the other characters run throughout as well. Like, did that start to colour your experience of Aaron Falk on the page?
Kind of yes and no, because I think actually now I think about it definitely had come out. So I remember sitting down to write Exiles and thinking like, oh my gosh, you know, am I like feeling a bit nervous about it? Like am I trying to write a book that's going to be made into a film? And that was a very daunting experience. And that was that sort of was a bit paralyzing. So I was able to kind of put that aside mentally and just think, you know what, look, I'm just, don't worry about any of that. You just writing a book. It's the same as all the other times. And so I was able to kind of compartmentalize it a bit. It did, though, it was interesting in that it did give me, I think, a few more inroads. So, for example, I really loved listening to the soundtrack. I thought the soundtrack of that film was really captured very, I think it was Peter Raeburn was a composer, and it's on Spotify. And I did find myself listening to that a lot because I think just the eeriness of it and the kind of, the way they captured the sort of, the sounds of kind of the country in the sort of musical form, I thought was really beautiful. As well, there was one point in Exiles, which is a folk book, where Aaron Falk is in a bar and he meets this woman for the first time, and they chat for a bit, and then he asks if she'll stay and have a drink with him. And I remember showing that scene to my husband and saying, "Like, do you think have I done enough here? Like, have they chatted for long enough? Like, is it believable that you know he would ask a bit more? Is it believable she would sort of stay and have a drink with someone she's just met?" And he sort of read and said, well, look, you know, obviously every word is gold, well done. But the thing is that the good thing is that everybody reading this now is going to be pitching Eric Garner. So, yeah, if you ask her to stay for a drink, she's going to be staying for a drink.
Yeah. So she would say yes to Eric Garner. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, that's so funny, isn't it? But it just is so interesting how, especially with something like series of books where you're revisiting characters over and over again and your readers already have a relationship with that character, and then as you go back to build more worlds around that character, there is a whole group of people out there already who have knowledge of them and expectations, I suppose. Yeah
it is that's right. And I think, you know, the no matter how well you describe someone in a book, if you get an adaptation made, that actor becomes that person. And I mean, I think that's, I mean, I have to say though, I mean, you couldn't ask for better than Eric Garner. I remember when they first told me that he was interested in maybe playing the role, and I honestly could not believe it. And I remember thinking straight away, how perfect. Like, he had not even crossed my mind. I would never have assumed they would have got an actor of that caliber. So when they said his name, immediately I could see it. And I think I could see it for all those reasons. That, you know, that made me respond to the character on the page. You know, he's warm. You know, he's somebody you kind of want to follow through the story. I mean, and everybody, he's such a beloved Australian icon.
Yeah.
You're already, you know, 75% of the way there in terms of getting people on board with him before he even opens his mouth. So, and he's brought so much to that role. And I think it was so lovely to see the way the readers embraced him. You know, they really felt that he did a good job with it and were delighted to kind of see him play that character. So, yeah, it was a really, yeah, I was really so happy to have him involved.
On that note, will you ever revisit Aaron Falk, do you think?
Yeah, look, I haven't any plans to, but I mean, never say never, I guess. I mean, it was a very conscious decision to make Exiles kind of the third and, you know, really the final book in his series for reasons that I've kind of delved into quite a lot of time, mainly around the fact that I think, you know, endings are really important in fiction. And I think it's a real shame. We could all think of series, both book and TV, where they have just, I mean, essentially jumped the shark, I suppose, you know, it's just, they've just gone on beyond really their use by date. And it sort of sullies really the love you had for the original, you know, book or show or whatever. And I really did not want to get to a point where that happens. But then to avoid that, you do have to kind of make a conscious choice about it. And I felt, given his job and where he is in life, it felt like this was a really natural point to leave him. And I wanted to give him an ending that was, he'd earned. I mean, having said that, in the future, I mean, honestly, if an idea came up that could only be told by him, he was the best person. Some time has gone by and it felt like he was the person for it. I would absolutely consider it. I don't have enough ideas to throw away good ideas for the sake of it. If it came up, I would consider it. But I haven't got any active plans right now.
Yeah. Oh, but I love that, because that means that if the right story did come along, you wouldn't necessarily be averse to revisiting. That sounds like the best way to be. I have to say, Exiles was my favorite of the three. Because I feel exactly the same as you. I cannot stand it when things get dragged out and out and out and out. I want that satisfaction of an ending, and it's very unpopular. That's why I actually probably watch more Australian and UK TV than US, because they tend to love to draw things out enormously in the US.
Yeah. And it's very hard to like it when a series has gone on for so long. It's very hard sometimes to stay as engaged as that, because you're forced to remember things that you maybe read 5-6 years ago, once on holiday, and you know, you're forced to kind of remember characters and things. I think as both an author and as a reader, it's quite a challenge. And look, some people pull it off beautifully. Some people can have really, really good long running series. But it is a skill and it is a challenge. I think it's what you have to be prepared to grapple with. I felt in that case. I think it was a really fun book to write as well, because I went in knowing it was going to be the last one. I could just leave it all on the field. You know, I wasn't having to kind of open doors for maybe in the future or introduce a long lost brother or something like that. Like it was just him. The entire thing was built around him. And everything I wanted to happen could happen. And then that was the end.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. I would love to end by hearing about any Australian authors you might recommend. I feel like, you know, as I said, more and more Australian authors are kind of getting an international audience. It feels like now, because I've lived in the UK for so long now, and it feels like it's easier for me to get hold of Australian authors than it was 20 years ago. But is there any Australian authors that you love of any genre that you feel like you would love more international readers to read?
Yeah. I mean, the first one that comes to my mind is like Sally Hepworth, who has, look, she doesn't need any help from me. She has a huge following already. But she is someone who I feel her books just go from strength to strength. Every time she has a new novel out, she's knocked out of the park. So Darling Girls was her, her second most recent one, and Mad Mabel is coming out quite soon. And they are both, if anybody hasn't discovered Sally, you are in for a treat. She's about to become your new favourite author. She writes kind of domestic noir, I guess, for want of a better word, but kind of gritty, real life, often set in kind of Bayside Melbourne or sort of country Australia. Characters you can relate to, a lot of really funny moments, real page turners, a good mystery. So do yourself a favour and grab one of hers if you haven't already. Another one I really liked in terms of recently is a new one by Kate Mildenhall, who is an author impossible to describe because she jumps genres like no one I have ever discovered before. So she's written like a sci-fi one, she's written like a historical mystery, she's written just everything. But her most recent one, which are all beautifully written, but her most recent one is very much in my space. It's kind of a crime mystery one. Called The Hiding Place by Kate Mildenhall, and is about a group of people who go off to extended family who buy like a bush block, and they go off on a working bee weekend, kind of clear some trees and camp out and enjoy their new, you know, green space. And from like within the first, you know, 20 minutes, things start to go very wrong. And it's just this weekend of this, like, you're reading it, but you know, with your hands over your eyes, inhale that book. The Honey Place by Kay Mildenhall, I would also highly recommend.
Amazing. Thank you. That sounds great. I am definitely going to go look that up. I'm going to put the links to those in the show notes. I will put the links to The Last One Out and all your other books in the show notes as well. Jane, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for chatting with me. Honestly, I love picking up your books. I love them so much. I feel like I'm back at home and I feel like I just completely swept along. I just adore them. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
No worries. Thank you so much. That was a really great chat. Thank you.